Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Daniele's aux cord. This is more of a Friday night song than a Friday morning song, but this is all right. I like this. I like this vibe. I'm Blake Murphy. It's JD Bunkus. Check us out on social, Blake Murphy ODC, JD Bunkus. Keep sending in, the texts are there at 590, 590, but you can also just hit us on our socials. Let JD know if you like that OG Ananobi for Miles Turner framework or the platter for Yusuf Nurkic.
The platter framework. For Yusuf Nurkic, I think the Raptors do immediately because it's really not like,
so
they don't give anything away.
Here's another question.
Yeah.
So last night, yesterday afternoon, we asked before the game, Kirk Cousins to the Steelers. After Kirk Cousins beats the Steelers last night in what was like kind of a blowout and then a fake comeback.
Honestly, this is one of the stupidest games I've ever seen in terms of, I watched the first half very passively because the Leafs were on. I'm like half paying attention. Game. It's a bad game. It's a blowout. And I'm going, boy, the two teams that couldn't beat the Lions. What a way to sell a Thursday night game, and the Steelers are dead, and this is one way to go. I was getting pounded by this Vikings team. And then having it on to start the second half just because of gambling purposes, of course, and then it actually becomes a game.
You would end up gambling on it.
The thing is, though, I just did props. I didn't actually gamble on the outcome for that reason, because of those two teams, and it ends up becoming like a really great second half. Is Charles there?
Yeah, Charles is there. So, yeah, that not the best way to tee up a Thursday night game, but what a way to sell a Sunday afternoon game. Charles Davis on the call, NFL on CBS for Raiders Chiefs this Sunday. Charles, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I did love there's one sentence I just heard in your conversation there that was absolutely so spot on. Way to sell a Thursday night game. The two teams that couldn't beat the Lions.
Yeah, no. Yeah, catch the fever, both these teams. I want to start with this, though, Charles, because yesterday we kicked around the idea with Peter King of, you know, who's going to be where in terms of the quarterbacks of these two teams next year. And, hey, maybe, you know, Kirk Cousins actually ends up as the Steelers quarterback if they decide to go with, you know, this future of trying to remain competitive, that they're the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're not going into a full rebuild. But then I thought about something as I'm watching that game. Mike Tomlin was thrown in rumors when we saw college coaching vacancies come up at LSU. And I didn't know how real those are. I'm not connected enough to understand whether or not that's even something that he would want to do. But either way, his name was in the mix. And I thought, are we sure Mike Tomlin's there? I'm guessing the Steelers would want to keep him there. But and like, you don't really walk away from those kind of NFL jobs, maybe. But how certain are you that the Steelers continue next season after all of this with potentially needing a new quarterback? Like, how far does this rebuild go in Pittsburgh once Ben leaves?
Really good question. Based off of what I've seen in the years that I've covered the league and just, you know, watched NFL football and just seeing how the Rooney family operates, you know, it's pretty simple, right? The number's right in front of us. From the time they hired Chuck Knoll, there have been three coaches with the Steelers, Knoll, Cowher, and Tomlin. So I think you're spot on in terms of they are not looking to get rid of Mike Tomlin by any stretch. I don't think Mike Tomlin's looking to leave Pittsburgh. And I think that what he said about the college job, I think he was really accurate with that. Because we've gotten used to coaches telling us, I'm not interested in doing a press conference in that city the next day, right? I mean, we're used to that. I think Mike Tomlin told us the truth about a college job. An NFL job would be interesting. Because I think Peter King had it in his column last week about trades, you know, coaches being traded as opposed to just being, you know, coaches just moving.
Yeah, the Herm Edwards.
Things could move in a different way. John Gruden, remember, was traded from the Raiders to Tampa Bay, you know, those sorts of things. So maybe there's something like that to it. But as far as rebuild, the Steelers in full rebuild, I've never really felt that as part of their DNA. They have plenty of pieces in place. They've got some moves they have to make. We see that. But I think new quarterback doesn't mean that it's a total teardown and whatever assets they have will be traded. Does that make sense? T.J. Watt won't be gone now or will be on the block because they're starting over. I don't think they're going that far with it. But the Kirk Cousins thing at quarterback, which you just floated out there, intriguing.
Yeah, I know.
Because the Steelers and quarterback, that's going to be a monster discussion, because I'm just telling you now, I don't think the draft coming up this year is going to be anywhere like it was last year, where we were saying, hey, if you draft a quarterback last year, we were talking about that quarterback starting day one. I don't know how many of the quarterbacks in this year's draft we're going to be looking at going, draft this quarterback, he's your day one starter. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch and see how it unfolds.
So let's look ahead to this weekend, since I think that Thursday nighter doesn't deserve any more air. Charles, you have Raiders Chiefs on Sunday. The Chiefs have started turning things around again. They've won five in a row, but in those five wins, there's only one game where they've had the big kind of Chiefs-y scoring output. Is that more of a good sign for their ability to win in a number of different ways? Or are you still concerned that, hey, we haven't really seen the best version of the Chiefs even during this winning streak?
I think they would tell you they feel like they haven't shown their best version, even though they're on a five-game winning streak. We've actually talked with Kansas City yesterday with, you know, coaches and players, and it was funny. One of them said exactly what you just kind of posed, you know. Yeah, we've won five in a row, but we haven't been our best. They haven't been our best five because we haven't put it all together yet. But we're encouraged because all the things that were going wrong on one side of the ball earlier in the year, the defense, that seems to be corrected and they're playing better. And before, the offense was carrying us, and now they're going through their struggles and the defense feels good that, hey, we're really contributing here. But the offense feels like, you got to be kidding me, because they don't feel like the league is caught up to them. You know, they don't feel like scheme is the issue, that people are saying, hey, we can slow you down. They feel as much more that it's self-inflicted. Their turnovers, their penalties, their mistakes, much more so than any defense is slowing them down. So I definitely think there's more out there for Kansas City, and they feel like they're getting closer. Mm. But, you know, teams always say that. They have to go out and prove it now. And it's not going to be easy down the stretch. I mean, they've got some games still. I mean, I think they've got Pittsburgh still on the schedule. I think they have to go to Cincinnati. You know, they got to close out their AFC schedule. I think Thursday night they play the Chargers. Mm-hmm. So it won't be easy for Kansas City at all down the stretch, but they are playing better. And last thing, if you watch Kansas City's defense with Steve Spagnuolo and watch any of his defenses, the Giants, Kansas City, you'll notice a pattern of slow starts, big finishes, here we go again.
What's weird with the Chiefs is whenever I watch them, I always feel like the defense isn't as good as we're giving it credit for, and the offense isn't as bad as we're making it out to seem. And
that's good. You know, hey, let me jump in real quick on that, because what you're saying, let's start with that defense.
Yeah.
Because remember, in this resurgence, let's go back about who they've beaten. Green Bay, no Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, if I'm them, though, I'm just like, we beat Green Bay. We only held them with one touchdown. And no further questions.
And that's exactly how they're doing it.
Yeah.
But to your point, are they as good? That would be the thing we would say. Hold a second, there's no Aaron Rodgers. How excited should you be on that? Dallas is one I think they should celebrate because of what they did with Dallas, with Dak. It wasn't – who was Dallas missing? No one.
Receivers.
You know, but I mean, but CeeDee Lamb was there. I mean, but they did that day against Dallas in the O-line, and they got to Dak five times. They had two picks. I mean, they had a big day against them. That was one of their better games overall.
Mm-hmm.
But your point still remains. All the teams they beat, you're kind of looking at it and saying, okay, they were missing this. They didn't have this. They didn't have that. All they can do is play who was in front of them. And that's exactly what they're saying to themselves. I don't care what the outside's saying.
Mm-hmm.
We are playing better. Because earlier in the year, they weren't playing well at all. So they will take this.
Yeah, I agree with it. And it's just, I never really know how to feel. Because I've had days with the Chiefs where I go, am I going to pick the Patriots with Mac Jones over them? Like, Patrick Mahomes is going to play this guy in a playoff series. And he's going to lose? I don't know. And then I remember this one thing, because the AFC is just so, I just don't know what to make of it. I think about this Bills team, right? We're dancing on their graves right now. And this is the way that we're going to pivot to this, I think, a little bit. I go, you know what? The Bills might lose to Tom Brady this weekend, and it is going to be just a huge narrative thing, and I am going to pounce on it like nobody's business because that is what I do for a living. But I also remember the way that that Bills offense looked against the Chiefs and how they kind of constructed themselves to beat that Chiefs team. And so if the Bills lose this weekend, I feel like everyone is going to write them off, myself included. I'm going to say the Bills are broken. The Bills are dead. The Bills are over. Their reign at the top of the AFC East is over. And yet I kind of feel like if the Chiefs play anybody that's going to beat them, it's still the Bills based on what we saw. Like, I think that what the Bills did to them was real. And I think that that's what a really good high-powered offense might look like against that Chiefs defense. And I'm still not really sure what, you know, Patrick Mahomes and co are going to do to counter that.
I love that because you're right. Everyone's looking at the Bills now, lose to the Patriots in a game where the Patriots only threw it three times. Mm-hmm. And on a day at home that you would think should be more of a Bills day, but they're not constructed that way. So it's a weird thing, right? A team in Buffalo is not constructed to be a team that runs the ball in bad weather. Think about that. Because they're not. That's not who they are. And so that's a change. But how they played in that Kansas City game during the regular season, how we've seen them go about it with others, I can't get that out of my head. I'm not about to write them off. And I think that their finish is a good finish. I think there's Carolina still left on the schedule. Jets are still left on the schedule. I'm not about to kick them to the curb. But how you described it is perfect. If they go to Tampa and get whacked nationally, people are going to just say, that's it. The Bills are out. Who's in? Who's this? Who's that? I don't think we're there yet. I really don't. And I think it's a team that's got to be extremely frustrated right now by what happened, you know, against the Patriots, what's happened in recent weeks. I'm not ready to kick them to the curb yet. I want to see how they come out because I do think the Tampa is the favorite, duh. But I just have the sneaking suspicion Buffalo's going to play well in this game. I just do. I've seen it too many times in this league where teams have been bad and they bounce back. I know we're not talking about Thursday night, but didn't Minnesota just lose to Detroit and then turn around and find a way to really jump on Pittsburgh? We can say Pittsburgh's not as great as they used to be. It's still Pittsburgh. So that's how this league operates. People tend to bounce back pretty well.
I think it's just like it's a matchup league. Like it's a matchup league.
It is.
And
it always is.
I know, but it's like we've forgotten that to a certain degree this
year.
Right. Because we keep talking about it like, well, this team beat that team and that means that they're gonna beat that, you know, and we keep doing it that way, the transitive property.
Football.
Right.
That's like college football by the end of the year when we do collective schedules. By the end of the year, we have Wabash as our national champions, you know, because they beat them, who beat them, who beat them, who tied them, who did this, and it doesn't really work. And I'm totally in agreement with you when we talk about it's a matchup league because that's what it's all about. The NFL is like boxing. Styles make the fight. And some styles versus each other are horrific. You don't want that team. Even though your record is better, you don't want to see them. For whatever reason, they mess up your mojo. And others, it looks like you're outmatched, but for whatever reason, you match up with them well. So you're exactly right. Styles make the fight in the NFL. And this league this year and the AFC, every year we talk about who's going to go from worst to first in a division, because I think we're, 16 of the last 18 seasons that has happened, at least one division. And every year for the last 15, 20 years, whatever that stat is, four teams at a minimum are new in the playoffs every year. But we certainly are shaping up to have another season like that, aren't we?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think the Cardinals were last in the NFC West. They're leading it right now. Yeah. That's just one example.
Yeah.
Think about all the teams that are in contention for the playoffs. The Patriots didn't make playoffs last year. Chargers didn't make playoffs last year. I just stand AFC and point out a bunch of teams. So it's going to be a great finish.
We're doing a lot of UFC betting today because it's a huge card this weekend. So I was going to say matchup league, like in the UFC, it's about the matchups. You went to boxing. It's like, all right, teach their own. But yeah, like that's the way that I was.
Who's the card this week? Who's the top matchup?
The top matchup is Dustin Poirier versus Charles Oliveira. Amanda Nunes is the headline, but the thing is like it's just Amanda Nunes because she's such a dominant champion that they keep throwing people against her to fight. But it's like you just watch Amanda Nunes. Like her nickname is the Lioness, and it's like it's very appropriate because it's just like it's a slaughter. It's like you're watching somebody get thrown into a lion's den, and that's it. It's like she gets a paycheck. So do you. That's it.
But yes.
It's going to be a good one. But yeah, I think that the Bucks are susceptible through the air. Like, the secondary has been beat up all year. There's a reason that was the team that went and tried to get Richard Sherman, and they haven't
heard the first game.
Exactly. They're not good against the pass. And I could see the Bills opening this thing up. I think that they could hang in this game. We could just remember that, again, matchup league. It's like, you know, we keep doing this thing with the NFC West, and maybe this is the way to ask you about that, you know, how this Cards matchup is going to go, because I feel like they're disrespected. But we do this thing where we go, okay, the Seahawks beat the Niners. The Niners beat the Rams. The Rams beat the Cardinals. This is the way that the formula works in that division. But I feel like that's actually the way it is in the AFC this year, where it's like, okay, if it's the Patriots against, you know, if it's the Chiefs against the Patriots, I like the Chiefs. If it's the Patriots against the Bills, I like the Patriots. And if it's the Bills against the Chiefs, I like the Bills. Like, that's the way that I'm breaking that one down. So why don't more people respect that Arizona Cardinals team, though? Because, like, I think they've won 7 games on the road by double digits. I think I have that right. And yet it sort of feels like going into this game, I'm like, the Rams are going to do the same Rams get the Cardinals thing.
I think it's as simple as, like, I've got the Raiders in Kansas City this week. People early in the season did not go all in on the Raiders despite their start, because the previous 2 seasons they'd had similar starts and horrific finishes and didn't make the playoffs. So everybody's like, all right, let's just wait on that. I think the Cardinals are very similar. The last 2 seasons, they've been in positions where the playoffs were realistic, and they didn't get there either time. And people, just for whatever reason, they're off the radar. Look, Seattle was a big topic of conversation the entire offseason because of Russ, and they've been around the scene for a while. So Seattle's got their bona fides established, right? Mm-hmm. The Rams, they made the big move for Stafford, and they've been to a Super Bowl, you know, 2 seasons previous. So they had it there. San Francisco had been in the Super Bowl. So you kept saying, and Kyle Shanahan is this great play caller, it's schemer, et cetera. So everything's out there. With Arizona, you're talking about a quarterback who's 5'1", and I'm saying that with tongue in cheek, right?
Honestly, though, it's like, he's closer to that than 6'1".
Right. But he has been spectacular when he's been on the field. And then you throw in, they hired a college coach who'd been fired, who was 35-45 in his college career. And they collapsed last 2 years with it. So they didn't get respect. But when you look at that team overall, and if people just step back, the quarterback has played well. And when he's been hurt, they went and got a quality backup this year in Colt McCoy, and went 2-1 while he was out. You look at what they did to beef up the running game, and James Conner has played very well this year. Look at how they keep overhauling the defense, and defense has been one of the better ones in the NFL. They don't get the respect they deserve, but Monday night, they get a national stage again. They get the Rams for the 2nd time, and they get them at home. And if they beat them, I do think that the narrative changes nationally for the Arizona Cardinals.
Charles Davis, color analyst for NFL on CBS. You got Raiders Chiefs this Sunday. I'll be tuned in. It's so fun because here in Canada, obviously, we get a couple games, and I don't have, like, a strong rooting interest because I'm a Jaguars fan, and I don't want to watch them anymore. But it's just like, oh, I'll fire up the Charles Davis game because, like,
when did you want to watch the Jaguars? Like, what was that?
They had that 1 year.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, when were you like, wow, what a run for me loving watching the Jaguars.
Mark Brunell's left-handed. Yeah, isn't that fun? Charles Davis, thanks so much, man. Have a great call Sunday and have a great weekend. Get some of that KC barbecue in you.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys. You take care of yourselves, and I'll look forward to talking to you next week.
See you, man.
Charles Davis. 4th member of the team. 3rd today.
Yeah. Shows up.
Yeah. Oh, wow. No, you don't want that. Can we play the drop of Ailish explaining her reason for why she's not here?
I dare you. I already told her. It was Logan Roy. Catchphrase.
Yes.
So
do you want to chew on some football stuff, or do you got something else to chew on here?
I it's up to you. What do you think, just quickly, before we do something that you want, about the rock, paper, scissors nature of the NFL this year? Like, that's how I feel about it. It's like, anybody who has a hard take about who the best team is like, you're going to look like an idiot if they play the wrong team. Yes. That's all this thing comes down to. You're only going to look smart. I think that the good team is Green Bay, where they're kind of like matchup independent. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter who they play. They're going to be good against them. I love Belichick. You know that I'm all in on my Patriots this year, right? Vic and I are Team Belichick. There's nothing I want more than to see Belichick beat Brady in a Super Bowl. Like, I want Brady to get there, and then Belichick does the Sean McVay 3 points is all you get performance against Brady, and then we all get to do, like, because if you were either a Belichick or a Brady guy, like, if you care about football, you were either a Belichick or a Brady guy, and I was always a Belichick guy, okay? And then Brady won that Super Bowl, and I had to limp off and into a cave, and Vic and I are in there, you know, huddled together, trying to make fire, and it sucked. We were in the wilderness for a whole year, and now we're back, baby, Belichick guys. But God, I don't think that there's a way in hell I'm going to tell myself realistically that Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes, Belichick with Mac Jones is going to beat him. God, it's just such a hard thing to wrap my mind around. Like, maybe. But it's just, I don't believe that the Patriots are there yet where, like, they can hang in a game where they fall down a couple of scores and get back into it with Mac Jones in a playoff game.
No, and I think the Cardinals are such a great litmus for the entire NFL season.
They might be really good, too. They need to win today.
But this is the thing. They can't win today.
Yeah.
They're the only team in the league with fewer than 3 wins.
Yeah.
And like you said, 7 double-digit victories on the road. I double-checked. Right. Yeah.
I play fast and loose with stats.
Doesn't seem like there's a lot of... Yeah, but you got me.
Yeah, so I know.
It's fine. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of optimism about the one team with an outlier record. And I think that tells you a lot. Because everyone else has 3 or 4 losses or 5 or 6 losses. And I mean, I don't think it's necessarily the entire league is a rock, paper, scissors situation.
Yeah.
I think a lot of teams fall into that. But there are also just some teams that are going to make the playoffs where you just have no idea which version's showing up. Like, you've got the Cowboys that would fit in there. The Chargers are the best example of it. Is like, I don't think for the Chargers it's a matchup thing necessarily. I think it's a which version of this team is going to show up kind of thing. So it's going to be a spicy playoffs.
The Chargers are the crazy hot girl that's like, God, you wish she just wasn't so nuts.
you're talking the Mendoza diagonal.
Yeah, she's so hot. And it's just like, come on, please just be a little normal. And then, you know, she's showing up at your apartment at 4 a.m. and blowing up your buzzer and calling your phone 100 times to fight about something that you didn't even know was a thing. Like, that's what the Chargers are. And that you can't marry the Chargers. I'm sorry. You just cannot marry the Chargers. Every once in a while on a weekend, you can go with the Chargers, but not that one. So, matchup league to me. By the way, fast and loose with the stats. You got to admit, though, I do get them right most of the time. Like, I had Justin Jefferson yesterday. I was like, I see these things once or I hear them once and it sticks in my brain. And then I'm like, I try.
I will say this, though.
I get them wrong a lot, too. Confirmation bias?
Not a lot necessarily, but I don't. Like, if you get one right, I verify for you.
Yeah.
If you get one wrong, I just don't mention it because I don't want to be like sandbagging
you
on the air.
Can you remember one where I got wrong?
Yeah, I can remember a couple. But, okay.
Say one good one.
It's time for something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
I wanted to be Seward.
You want to stay at football or you want to do your other thing?
What do you feel about these two? You decide.
Yeah, you do your, because I don't know where else we're going to get it in. So,
okay. This is something to chew on. There's all these reports that Pete Walker could be in the mix for managerial jobs. The Mets are one of them, right? And Blair and Barker yesterday, I don't want to misquote them, but essentially it was, hey, don't be surprised if Pete Walker is in the mix for other managerial jobs as well. If you hear his name all over the place, he's a wildly, wildly respected dude. I got to admit, I had always just sort of assumed that this guy didn't want to be a manager because why else wouldn't he be? He's been the pitching coach for forever. And people in Toronto love the guy. Here's something to chew on. If it really comes down to nuts and bolts of you're going to lose Pete Walker, fire Charlie Montoyo and keep Pete Walker. I'm sorry, but, and this is not to say that Charlie is important or I want Charlie fired, but if you're going to lose one of the guys, give me the guy who actually I believe has more of a quantifiable benefit to this organization. Managers now have been largely put in a place where we say when it comes to game strategy, well, what are you actually doing? How much of it is the influence from the front office and the analytics department versus how much of it is your gut feeling? And the organization that the Toronto Blue Jays emulate themselves around is the Tampa Bay Rays, who are the most criminal offenders of this, like to the point that they took Blake Snell out of a playoff game in which he was amazing and lost because they trusted those computers. So if it comes down to it, and I don't want this to be the option, but if Pete Walker says, you know, I want to be a manager, then make him the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Make an uncomfortable decision. I don't think Pete Walker would even accept it, to be honest. Like, I think that he'd be like, no, this is brutal. I can't do this. Like, it'd be so weird. This is Major League Baseball, not Succession. But even still, if it was up to me, if I had my druthers, I think Pete Walker is more valuable to the Blue Jays than Charlie Montoyo is. And that's not a shot at Charlie. That's just like the respect that I have. And I feel like the organization has for Pete Walker.
You know what it is?
Something to chew on.
Something to chew on.
Yum, yum, yum.
We're going to talk a little more Raptors, a little more NBA after the break. And then we'll get back to NFL. We'll have Coolbeck Chris on at 8:30. We got a little Leafs coming up at 8 with Ian Tulloch. Lots of stuff still to come.
All right.
Ron McLean and Ariel Helwani later.
This is gonna get contentious. The show today, I can already feel it's good. It's like a feisty Friday thing. Like Ariel always tries to mix it up with me. Mm-hmm. You know, he always.
And we don't have our vibes coordinator here.
I know, and Ariel's gonna just make a whole bunch of stuff about like how we can't. I guarantee you, I can predict it right now. How we can't say Bing Bong. How the Raptors suck and the Knicks.
You guys are gonna fight about RJ.
Yeah, it's gonna suck. All that exactly. Then he's going to lie about what I've said about Vlad, like he always does. It's his move. He lies and says, I said things about Vlad that never happened, but people believe him because he's a journalist.
Wait, I can do that?
Yeah, you can lie.
I can just make stuff up that you said and just be like, well, I'm the journalist on the show.
I've made up things that you've said.
Yeah, I know. Do it all the time. But that's the whole thing. You have no integrity.
But here's the thing, though. Yeah, not only do I have no integrity, it's the same. It's the Costanza thing. It's not a lie if you believe it. Like, I heard you say that, and you're like, that's not what I said. But I'm like, yeah, but that's how I interpreted it. Yeah. So it's like, to me, it's true. And then, like, Chris...
Yeah, you're mad at him.
Oh my God, I'm so mad at Chris. Like I can't even tell you like how mad. It's gonna be really, really bad. All and right. Then you know,
let's have one good
Ian
segment.
Tulloch is gonna say some nerdy thing to me, and yeah. I'm gonna be like, great. Thanks,
having Ian Tulloch on the morning after Kasha scores two goals.
I know.
That's kismet right there.
We need to talk about this trade more though.
Yeah, we'll do that after the break, and we'll tee you up for 2 hours after that of contentious conversations. Mm-hmm. All that's next right. On the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
This is unexpected. This is way off the charts of where I thought we were going to be today. This guy went from Italian opera to West Coast hip hop. And now we're here with I'm redneck and Mel's red and I'm going to be in the dogs are there.
My family. And
my family's going to be tougher than you. Trouble, we're getting in trouble. Yeah, we got boots and boots and trucks and boots. And you're going hunting. See, like, I can't even make this up. The show, this song is doing the best job for me every time I take a break from it.
You can tell me. So pride myself
podcast
on being a pretty versatile
uh-huh.
music guy.
Uh-huh.
You could tell me that was a real country song or like a South Park
a parody. Yeah.
Country spoof.
Yeah. And, where were you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where were you when they built the ladder to heaven? That's that one.
Let's pivot off
well,
of that.
I got to say, though, I am a country music fan, and I actually like pop country, too. And like
what is pop country? Like Sam
like
Hunt?
Florida Georgia Line. Yeah, Sam Hunt, like all that. Like, but I prefer Sturgill Simpson and Colter Wall, Tyler Childress. Like, that stuff... Childers, I never
a
really know.
Guy?
No, not. Less so? Can I tell you the truth? Not at all. Okay. Like nothing. It does nothing for me. So yeah, I think I kind of vacillate though between country artists where I go like I either love this or I can't stand it. That goes. No offense. We're not shaving Oxcores today, but you could guess which pile that one's going in. Now speaking of piles, I don't know who the... I just realized that it's not Neil O'Shea anymore. Like, who is the Portland Trailblazers GM now?
TBD?
Is it just no one?
Well, I mean, they have someone in the spot in an interim basis.
Okay, but yeah, I was going to say, like, I am...
Joe Cronin.
I am Joe Cronin. Oh, wait. No, I'm not Joe Cronin.
No. You're the Pacers side.
Yes, that's right. I forgot that we're done with the Nurkic deal.
Yeah, you're Kevin Pritchard.
Yes, I was going to say. So
for the Blazers one, you were Bobby Bunkus,
mm-hmm.
but now you're Kevin Pritchard. I don't have a good pun for Kevin Pritchard.
Well, I tried to, but here's the reason why I'm playing Pritchard in this case is because you didn't like it from the Raptors standpoint. But I actually think the framework of this trade makes a lot of sense. Here's why. I believe Siakam is good. I don't think he's great, but I think he's really good. And I think Fred is good. And I actually think Scottie Barnes could be a somebody someday. And I'm looking at this team and I'm saying, what is our direction? How are we going to get a center? And it's like, if you're going to the draft, well, then you know what? then trade Siakam and get assets back, because the timelines just here are not going to make sense. You can both like the Raptors players, but not love the direction of the team. And right now, they're still stuck between two paths. And so this path that I'm trying to outline here with this Miles Turner trade is essentially like, hey, let's try to win then. Let's try to win. Let's try to figure this out. Let's push in some chips. There is another option, and I didn't really want to, but like, the other option for this Miles Turner trade is taking the Goran Dragic contract, throwing it down on the table to the Pacers and saying, how many picks and like Precious Achiuwa types do we have to do to get this deal done? Like, if we give you the Goran Dragic contract, Precious Achiuwa, Malachi Flynn, and two first round picks, one of them being unprotected, including this year's pick, because like we're already kind of in it. Are we talking now, or is that too steep? For me personally, that's not necessarily the direction that I gravitate towards first, because I don't know really what the championship quote unquote ceiling is of this team. However, I don't mind Miles Turner because he's what, 25 years old?
Uh-huh.
He's 25 years old, and I think that the league is going in a direction where having those types of bigs is more valuable than we realize. That, like, there's a reason why the Cavaliers have turned things around so quickly with a guy like Evan Mobley.
And Jared Allen.
Right. Like, bigs, hey, this whole thing about bigs weren't valuable, well, guess what's back in style? Bigs. It's just like mid-range, where we went like, the mid-range sucks, and now we're finding out that guys who have good mid-range games, like, that's pretty still valuable.
Well, yeah, and in both of those cases, it was like, well, actually, no one should have been talking about it at that an extreme anyway. Like, you can't, the whole thing was like, the Warriors don't need a big.
Yep. So I'm not making this trade necessarily because I think that OG Anunoby isn't better or can't be better than Miles Turner. I'm making this trade because I need to balance out my roster, and I think that this is a good way of doing that. That, like, our gambit of trying to have everybody be 6'9" and have a similar profile is not really working for us taking the next step. So how do we get a little bit of lineup versatility? Well, this is the way that we do it. So I'm Kevin Pritchard, and I want OG Anunoby. And I say, you know what? This guy right now is hurt. The Raptors have Scottie Barnes. They have Pascal Siakam going well. They need a big. And I'm offering the Miles Turner. I'm trying to get the most return that I possibly can. And I think that's OG Anunoby, the former Hoosier. You are Masai Ujiri or Bobby Webster, who's ever taken this call. I think this goes above Bobby. This goes to Masai. Like, this is a Masai trade. I'm offering you Miles Turner for OG Anunoby. Straight up. You have said no.
Right.
But,
and again,
did you hang up the phone?
For anyone who wasn't listening earlier, the explanation for the no was, OG's a year younger. OG has 2 years extra left on his contract. One, if you consider the player option at the end.
Which I do. He has one more year.
Yeah. Like, he's a little cheaper. And you talk about...
By literally less than $2 million, but yeah.
Sure, but guess how close the Raptors are to being a tax team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a relevant factor.
So.
Yeah, well, it's a relevant factor. It makes for a big financial swing in real dollars when you say, hey, you either have to make a subsequent move or you have to...
Sure, but as Kevin Pritchard, I would like to say that I'll take on one of your crap contracts that you have to spend $1 million. Like, I'll take...
Boucher's the piece.
Well, I was just going to say, like, if you really want money off the books, if that's what this is about, I can't take Chris Boucher straight up. I think I have to have something else in there to make the salaries work. But you can throw in Chris Boucher, and I'll throw in something like an expiring, I don't know, maybe it's a Wanamaker or that O'Shea Brissett, who knows?
Yeah.
And we'll make this work.
My point is just that that's something the Raptors have to be aware of as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talk about, hey, you're doing this Miles Turner trade for because it fits your versatile defensive identity. OG Anunoby has been the most versatile defender in the NBA the last 2 years, mm-hmm. positionally. And that's not including this year. That's the 2 years prior. I think I like Miles Turner on the Raptors a lot better with OG Anunoby there. And I know that that's not how this works, right? Like, you have to give something up to get something back, obviously. But I think OG's better, and he's a better asset given the contract status and all of those factors. If you're the Raptors, you need more back in this. And
if you're
the Pacers, you're not giving up picks.
That's why I'm not giving you picks.
No. And you're probably not even giving a guy like Duarte, who, you know, is 24, sure, but is also in the first year of a very inexpensive 4-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I think you hit an impasse as these two teams. And generally, you know, trades that are borderline fair are the ones where both teams sit there and are like, well, okay, we've got the framework, but you give me a pick. No, you give me a pick. I don't see how that, like, I love Miles Turner for the Raptors if you can find a way to picks and contracts it there.
But so that's what I'm saying then. So I'm Pritchard. you're willing then to give me this year's first round pick because that's the starting block.
Like, yeah. If OG's not in there, if you're just taking the Goran Dragic deal as the main salary ballast in this.
So I am looking to rebuild.
Yeah.
And you are looking now to have Miles Turner.
Yeah. So we've got to have Dragic in the deal for financial reasons.
And I also want actually Chris Boucher in this deal because he's just an expiring contract and I'm looking to get out of money here too.
Okay. So we're going to throw Boucher in. We're going to throw Malachi Flynn in because he's, you know, that's a reasonable move for the Pacers to make. Hey, let's kick the tires on a
actually
on a
to be honest, you can keep Chris Boucher. We're not worried about that. I'd actually like Achiuwa and Malachi Flynn and this year's first as just a starter. And I also want another future first.
Okay. Well, now you're getting a little unreasonable. There's only a year and a half left of Miles Turner.
I'm trying to get the best deal for my team.
Well,
the Pacers
I know you are.
Miles Turner,
I know.
You don't think,
and you have
listen,
a pretty high bat now. Like your
the
other...
Golden State Warriors are calling me and they're telling me that they're going to give me Wiseman. They're going to give me picks. They're giving me basically they're opening up the treasure trove of whatever I want assets wise. Like you got to give me something.
They don't have a lot.
Well, they've got that. And that's good. That's good for you to say.
Yeah.
Masai.
They don't have a lot.
So you think that's too steep for Miles Turner if they say Achiuwa and Flynn.
So Achiuwa, Flynn and a first. And Dragic to make the salaries work, that would push the Pacers into the tax. So we got to send another salary back. So Justin Holiday is going to come back to the Raptors in this deal as well.
I like Justin Holiday though.
You got well. Do you like Justin Holiday more than being out of the luxury tax?
No,
that's a you decision. That's not a Raptors decision. That's a Pacers decision.
But I don't think that I don't view Justin Holiday as a negative asset to me. That's why. So like if you're getting him, you're getting another point guard who actually now you're not terrified every time Fred VanVleet comes off the floor. Now you're playing Holiday instead of Delano Banton right now. Listen, you're making this trade, Masai, so that your team wins. And I'm giving you Holiday. He's actually pretty good.
How about Torrey Craig as the filler then?
He's tough.
I know, but this is the thing. I'm trying to save you money here.
Sure, but you're not going to give me that future other first.
No, especially not if I'm helping you avoid the tax with this.
Are you going to at least give me a future second?
I mean, yeah, whatever. I don't care. So they're second round picks.
So
I'm a side user. Look at Justin Champagne.
Yeah. So basically, what you're saying here is what you're willing to give up for Miles Turner. The number one center in the center market right now, a guy that is 25 years old.
A first, and you'll eat a small salary to help the Pacers avoid the tax in the process.
We're not sure what Flynn is. We're not sure what Achiuwa is. We need that pick. We just do. We can't come out of this thing.
Well, you're already getting one.
Yeah.
You're getting this year's first, and we're in 12th in the East right now.
Yeah.
That could be a lottery pick.
Yeah, but
I didn't throw out protections on that.
Now you've got, so there's no protections on this year's Raptors.
I didn't say it. If you are asking for additional picks,
we're going to have
to talk protection.
I actually you know what? Now we'll consider this.
Okay.
We, the Pacers, I, Kevin Pritchard, will think about that.
Okay. Let's sit on that and let's let the listeners chew on it and tweet us or Instagram us or whatever. Let us know what you think.
You know what the problem is though? The last problem with it is just simply that if you get Miles Turner, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby comes back healthy, Fred VanVleet, Scotty Barnes, that team is not missing the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm good at my job, right?
Yeah, I know you are. And so my pick is bad, and that's why I still need that future first. I need a future first. You can protect it.
And then we're going to have to protect both those
sure,
picks. So,
but
that's a rough framework. The tough thing with the Pacers-Raptors trade, and I know everyone hates hearing about this stuff, but both of those teams are really close to the tax and won't want to be tax teams. So and the Pacers are probably trying to reroute Dragic for a third team anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's maybe a bigger thing. I want to pivot off of this. Let us know.
Oh, he doesn't play for the Pacers.
Right.
He's not even, he's doing the Carmelo Anthony, Atlanta Hawks thing where it's like, hey, make the jersey, but nah.
So one other thing I want to pull from this, and it's more about, it's more about the Pacers specifically, but you see a team like Portland starting to decide what they are and what direction they're going in, and the Pacers more aggressively letting it be known that they can have their pieces can be had with an eye toward the future. The Pacers are only a game behind the Raptors, but they are, I think, effectively saying, hey, this isn't the year for us. If we accidentally end up in the playoffs, cool, but we would love another Chris Duarte-type lottery pick. That makes it seven teams now that I think you could safely say are not intending or not expecting to make the playoffs. The Toronto Raptors are in 12th in the East, as I mentioned in our discussion. They're a game and a half back of a play-in spot. It's really early, 25 games in.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even a third of the way in. However, we know that NBA standings tend to stabilize around this point. There's not going to be a ton of turnover in playoff teams between now and the end of the season. So a team like the Pacers signaling this, and December 15th, which is next Wednesday, is generally the unofficial start of trade season because all the guys who got signed in the offseason, most of the guys who got signed in the offseason can now be dealt, and there's a little more freedom of movement and stuff. But it's also kind of the point where you have to start looking in the mirror and deciding what this season is for you. If the Pacers are one of seven teams that are already, like, not tanking, but, hey, we're okay with seeing what we have and as this record gets lower. And if you're the Raptors and you're a game and a half out of the playoffs and haven't looked tremendously good and might be considering the same, are you feeling a little bit of urgency to pick a direction here? And we talked with Grange about this yesterday, and he thought they weren't close to deciding on that direction, but that it needs to be soon maybe, because the Raptors are maybe a couple weeks from being in a limbo where you can't get to the bottom seven like you did last year, to do so, you have to just be so egregious with it that you're hurting your player development and stuff, or they got to get healthy and try to push for a playoff spot. Limbo's coming. They're not in limbo now. It's too early and everything's too close, but they're not far off from it.
I think limbo's the offseason, though, because you just said it.
But standings limbo.
I know, but even with this year, I just think that you already had signed up for standings limbo with this season. Like, that was the agreement that you made. Other teams, this is kind of why, like, I keep talking about the Miles Turner trade, is if you don't make a move for a guy like that and you don't sacrifice future assets, or you don't take advantage of a team like the Pacers saying, hey, we have, like, multiple good players that we're willing to deal. I don't think that Portland has anything that's realistic for Toronto. Like, what are you going to do? Like,
Nurkic thing would be cool, but it's very much a, like, if the Raptors were five games higher in the standings,
no,
the Nurkic thing makes a lot more
Nurkic
sense.
Nurkic isn't changing the ceiling. The gambit with the Miles Turner trade is that it actually unlocks a whole bunch of different things for your team. You get to keep your defensive identity. All of a sudden, you actually have a center that is a, like, real, he's not a franchise player, but he's a franchise center.
And he's one more year at a very affordable contract, whereas Nurkic is a UFA.
And you also have someone who can create his own shot and hit a wide open three, like, very, very few other
picks. 40% on threes this year. Why? On a good volume.
I can't believe you wouldn't even think about doing the OG trade for him.
Well, I could not have been clearer since Miles Turner was in college how much I love Miles Turner.
No, he's really good. But this is it, is you go out and get him and you say, hey, you know what? Fred Siakam, Miles Turner, OG, Scottie Barnes, like that. We think that that is enough pieces, and that actually what has been, I don't know, holding some of this roster back. We also have one of the best coaches in the NBA. That should be mentioned. You think that what is holding a bit of this roster back is that you just have had zero depth and you've had zero center play, and it's been a lot of, like, Precious Achiuwa and Chris Boucher, and those minutes are hurting you more than you guys have realized. So,
and you say hurting you, and I know you're talking, like, the Queen's English of, like, hurting, or you're kind of doing it as, like, it's hurting the team, but no, I think it means more like it's also hurting me.
Yeah, it is hurting me.
The royal we.
Yeah. I think that if you're not moving those picks, that's telling you that you're not doing it ever. Because I just don't think the other trades are realistic. The Bradley Beal one to me is
not
real.
Happening.
Raptors fans like to think that could happen. To me, that is a 0%.
It would have happened.
Not only would it have happened, if you're Bradley Beal and you're entering free agency, or you're part of this, his quote the other day was, I've never had control. I'm not making a huge grand gesture commitment to a franchise when I am finally getting an opportunity to kind of be in control of my own destiny. Does that sound like a guy who wants to sign up with the Toronto Raptors and Siakam and Fred VanVleet? Like,
yeah,
I don't think so.
You're basically trading for his bird rights, which allows you to go 5 years on him, and he's going to be 29 in the summer.
And he's not signing here. If Bradley Beal's doing anything, he's going to go somewhere and play with somebody of greater consequence than who the Raptors are.
The Beal thing made way more sense 2 years ago when he was making $27 million.
Yeah.
And the Wizards were clearly not good, and the Raptors were clearly still good, but a piece away.
That being said, I think you're out on Beal. I think you're out on Lillard. I think those are two pretty clear
things. The Lillard
things.
Thing, yeah.
For sure.
You don't have a chance.
The only reason that I'm bringing this up is because it's like the Pacers thing is, hey, That one is the only move this season that I think kind of feels urgent. There's no Raptors sell-off that's going to come. They're going to be a team that does what I think that their sort of plan in the beginning of the year was. Is, yeah. Hey, we're probably going to end up in a play-in game, all right?
Yeah.
We're probably going to end up in a play-in game. We're going to let these guys develop this way.
If we can turn Dragic and Boucher into seconds.
There was no avenue to getting the pick bad enough anyways, and we'll just enter the lottery and hope for the best with that thing. But ultimately, like, what were we going to do? What did people want us to do this offseason? Did they want us to just give away Siakam for free?
Trade the Scottie Barnes pick that now everyone's like, oh, well, you got to build around Scottie Barnes?
Exactly. They were just sort of dealt this. They have to stay in the middle road. And I don't think that they're going to make the decision this year. I don't see it. What I see is they enter the offseason and they do the same thing again, where Siakam's on the table. I'm sorry, but he is. And they say, we're open for business. Just give us a call with your ideas. We might go either way. But the one thing you might find out from this year and that you still need to do is the frustrating part that you and I keep talking about, which is like, get healthy so we can at least find out what kind of things that this core can accomplish and whether or not they are the extra piece away, whether it's a Kawhi situation where you go, we will sacrifice the future to try to go get even a short-term win now piece because we think that it can put us over the top, or whether you think like, you know what, these guys is currently constituted, the pieces don't work, they don't fit, it's not good enough, we're going younger, it's around Scottie Barnes, these guys are now being moved for young pieces, younger assets, it's a rebuild, it's not a retool.
Yeah. That's where you're at, and that's the path you got to decide from here. Things are a little more clear for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They are firmly in win now, but they've dropped three of their last four against some pretty good competition. We're going to sort through that, try to put some data on it, and figure out what the heck they're going to do with the Muzzin Hall pairing. We're going to talk about all that with Ian Tulloch of Maple Leaf Hot Stove after the break. That's next. The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.